there's a better place to get your podcasts. GCNLive.com. Hundreds of thousands of hours archived for your listening pleasure. All free at GCNLive.com.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm not a crook.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
You're listening to Jim Paris Live, your source for the latest news on money, politics, prophecy, and preparedness. And now your host, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com and the author of more than 30 books, Jim Paris.
All right, good evening and welcome to hour number two of the broadcast. Jim Paris here with you. And of course, the website is ChristianMoney.com. My guest this hour, his name is Dr. Gary Habermas. He is one of the world's foremost experts on historical evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You may also know him due to his association with Liberty University. He's a distinguished professor of apologetics and philosophy and chairman of the Department of Philosophy and Theology at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. Tonight, we're going to be talking about his fantastic book, The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus. Dr. Gary Habermas, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
I'm glad to be on with you. Thank you for the introduction.
Well, you're welcome, and I'll tell you, I was told by my production people it's okay to call you Gary, so
that's,
I'm going to do that.
That's fine.
It takes a lot to earn a PhD. I don't have one, so I greatly respect your credentials there, sir. Let me start with a really practical question. I want to get into this, and I'm glad we've got the entire hour of the show here, minus commercials, to do so. I have always believed, as a Christian myself, that without the resurrection, the whole deal falls apart. The whole idea of Christianity, the Christian faith, it's all gone in a puff of smoke, in my view. Now, there are others that have different views on this that can somehow come to a peace with the idea that, well, you know, maybe he really, you know, maybe Christ really did not rise from the dead. Maybe it wasn't really a physical resurrection. And, you know, in the end, we can still kind of somehow have a religion or a faith after that. I can't do that. Let me ask you, sir, how significant do you believe the resurrection is to our faith as a Christian?
I will take your view of the two. And I think it's kind of hard to argue with it, because I know things change in a modern time, and I think, you know, people pick and choose what they want to believe from Scripture and what they don't. But I think Paul is pretty clear in 1 Corinthians 15, mostly verses 12 through 20, where he says, I mean, everything you could think of, if Christ hasn't been raised from the dead, he basically asked the question, what is Christianity without the resurrection? And his answer is nothing. Twice he says, your faith is vain, which is interesting. He uses a different Greek word each time, but it means empty, fruitless, void. That's what Christianity is without the resurrection. He says, if Christ has not been raised, you've died in your sins. And because I lost my wife to cancer, I'm remarried now, but because I lost my wife to cancer in 1995, the verse that really kind of grabs me is the one that says, if Christ has not been raised from the dead, our loved ones who've died in Christ have died in vain. So, you know, verse 19 is probably the most pessimistic of all. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are the most miserable of all people.
And one of the things, yes, sir. And one of the things that the writers like yourself, Lee Strobel, and others look at is the changed lives of the people that were there at the time. And we're going to get into that tonight. But one of the things that I thought was significant was my pastor had spoke recently about the resurrection. I don't know if it was this Easter or the prior Easter, but it was interesting to note that right after the death of Jesus, that many of the disciples were reportedly, they gone back to their jobs. I mean, in other words, in their world, had he not resurrected, the deal was over too. So they had to conclude that they were following a Tony Robbins-like person who made this claim. And it was clear that the claim was made, because if the claim were not made, they might have continued on with their faith if Jesus had sort of set it up that, like, well, I'm going to die, and didn't really explain what he expected to happen or what he promised would happen. But they immediately got the cue that, okay, there's a crucifixion, he's dead, we now go back to our day jobs. How significant is it to, say, juxtapose that with a later reaction of them becoming martyrs?
Well, I think it's worthwhile. I think if you want, you do have that passage where they said, I'm going fishing, but in John 21. But maybe the most provocative, surprising verse of all, in that same passage we just talked about, 1 Corinthians 15, and I mentioned verses 12 through 20. Well, just 13 verses later, in 15:33, Paul says, if the dead are not raised, that he just got done saying the dead being raised depends on Christ's resurrection. So you could say, if Christ has not been raised, then let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Now, a lot of people think that phrase, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, or eat and drink, for tomorrow we die, you know, there's this kind of popular thought that that's from the 60s. You know, it's a 60s kind of line. But Paul's quoting the Old Testament. And so that's been around for a long, long time, more than 2,000 years. And he's saying that if Jesus had not been raised from the dead, I mean, let's just pick a Playboy-type philosophy. I mean, a partying, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, there's not much difference. If Christ has not been raised from the dead, do whatever you want, party, because what else do you have to look forward to? There's nothing else.
Now, one of the things I saw online, I saw a number of your presentations, and I want to ask you if the book, which I haven't completely read yet, we just received it just 2 or 3 days ago, so I haven't had a chance to completely read it, but it will be read, I guarantee you that. And I appreciate the additional copies you sent us as well for our library.
Did they? I didn't even know they did. But
yes,
you.
They did, and I greatly appreciate that.
Thank
of course, a non-Christian, you know, one of the things that happens is I was having a conversation with a young person over the Christmas holidays. Very smart young guy, college graduate, in his early 20s, and he immediately opined that, look, we don't even know that Jesus really ever lived. I mean, no less getting into what he really did, whether he, you know, had performed miracles, whether he really was crucified and resurrected. We can't even establish that he lived. And I said, whoa. That is not the case. And so we had a very in-depth discussion, and I at least got him that far on the spectrum that he had to accept that the historicity of Christ, that Christ Jesus, a man from Nazareth, really did live and is recorded in history. How important is it that you start with that point with people? Because there's so many people that think of this entirely as a legend, including that Jesus never even really lived.
Yeah, it's becoming more in vogue. I made a prediction to a PhD class just about a week and a half ago that I just guessed what some new trends might be. And one of them I said was, in my opinion, you're going to get more and more guys jumping on the bandwagon saying Jesus never lived. Now, today, there's virtually no one, virtually no body in a cognate field, historian, New Testament scholar, theologian, classicist, who holds a position in an accredited university or seminary, who says that. But I think it's going to happen more because, like a guy just said in a review in a prominent journal just about a month ago, the evidence is so good, he said, that Christians have less and less non-Christians have less and less debris to hide behind.
We've got a break coming up here, Dr. Habermas. Yeah. We'll take the break. When we come back, we'll talk about the historical evidence of Jesus's life and also his death and what happened to his followers after his death. Stay tuned.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems, the biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need. How prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com.
Hi, John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929.
This is John Huebner, and that was me in 2007. And we all know what happened when the subprime credit bubble burst. By March 2009, the dollar lost 50% of its value. The entire U.S. banking system was on the verge of collapsing. Like all financial problems of the past, is history about to repeat itself? Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129, before it's too late to protect yourself. Will the oncoming catastrophe take all private IRAs, 401ks with it? There is a way to protect your hard-earned assets. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237. 6-2-2-3-7, extension 129.
Healthy elimination is essential to high energy, a cheerful mood, and prevention of disease. Some of the founders of our modern holistic health thinking state that disease begins in a toxic colon. A toxic intestinal tract is the foundation for virtually all degenerative disease, and a clean and well-moving intestinal tract is the foundation of health.
I just want to say that you folks have an amazing product. I've taken whey protein products for years, and I've never noticed the results I have with your product. I've suffered with bouts of constipation most of my life. Within a few days of taking One World Whey, I noticed a dramatic change. Also, in the past few years, I've experienced symptoms associated with diabetes. I feel horrible when I've had too much sugar, and I've been getting the foot pain as well. But I've noticed in the past week or so, I'm not feeling bad anymore, and the foot pain is gone. I'm just finishing up a 5-pound tub I ordered and just got off the phone ordering more. I love your product. Thank you.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey neighbor, what are you doing digging? You had a heart attack last year.
Oh, I know. I was told no more hard labor.
Then why are you digging?
Well, I've been taking Extendovite. It's been approved to help my heart.
Extendovite? Is that a new drug?
No, not a drug. It's more like an herbal combination made from garlic and cayenne.
Herbal? How can that help?
Well, actually, we've taken herbs for thousands of years. Extendovite is doing the job for me.
Does your doctor know about Extendovite?
Yeah, my doctor knows, and he said it seems to be working for you, so don't stop taking it. I feel great taking Extendovite. I don't want to stop.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You are listening to Jim Paris Live.
Okay, we are back. My guest this hour is Dr. Gary Habermas. His book, The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus. And I'm on the Amazon page here, so you can find him on Amazon, and he has quite a number of books here. The Historical Jesus, Did the Resurrection Happen in Defense of Miracles? A lot of different books here to take a look at. And the one that we're looking at here right now also has a computer disc in the back of it, which has a number of other resources. Does that come, Dr. Habermas, with every book that's purchased, the interactive CD?
Every book, yep.
Wow, that's tremendous. And that book, I see it, it's on Amazon for just under $20, folks, and it's a very large book, including an interactive CD. So where we left off, Dr. Habermas, was we're talking about the historical proof that Jesus actually lived. Now, one of the things that I want to establish here early on is that, of course, for those folks that are not believers, who don't necessarily accept the inerrancy of the Bible, we're talking about Jesus living, the proof that he lived and walked this earth separately and aside from the Bible. That can be established in what we might call secular historical documents. Isn't that true?
I think that's clear, yes. In fact, yeah. The vast majority of critics will admit that. It's a very small group of people who generally are not, there's a few of them who are trained in relevant fields, but the majority are not. We're talking about bloggers, we're talking about popular folks, not the scholars. It's not a very popular view there.
And so what you end up having with someone is a much more substantive discussion, because I found that when you move from the realm of, well, Jesus wasn't even real, to the fact that he actually was historically recorded as a person on this earth, now you have sort of that Pontius Pilate moment, which is, now that we know he's real, what will you do with this man?
Right, right,
asking that question, what will you do with this man who really did walk the earth? So I love kind of looking at it that way in terms of evangelism. But then we get into a little bit of a tougher topic, right? Because now we're going to go from he really lived and walked on the earth to the whole issue of the resurrection. And one of the things that has always made me feel so confident in the resurrection was here we have someone claiming to be the Son of God who is undermining what's going on in the government, the Roman government becoming so concerned about what this guy is saying, and especially the religious leaders of the day. We've got to get rid of this guy because he's really causing a lot of trouble, getting people to possibly believe he really is the Messiah. And the idea that they would not have closely guarded his tomb and done everything they could do to make sure that they could prove to the people that he really did die, because just crucifying him might have made him a martyr, and the movement might have spread even more like wildfire if the body somehow mysteriously disappeared. So if anybody had a motivation at the time to be sure that they knew that this guy had been crucified, that he'd been put in a tomb, that he did, that nothing was going to happen, no shenanigans. What's your view of how concerned the powers that be might have been at the time to be sure that this kind of a thing could not have happened?
Well, I think that we have all kinds of assurances, and I think one of the neat things about the assurances is, like any kind of history, evidences are better the more you have, the earlier they are, and the more different angles that they come in from. In other words, if you had five arguments and they were all early, well, that's great. But they're all Christian. Okay, well, you guys are a little bit prejudiced. This is something you believe in, and it's really big. But if you have arguments from different kinds of Christians, different parts of the Roman Empire, you have non-Christians, you have sources outside the New Testament, sources inside the New Testament, sources that even critics will agree with you are very, very early, that variety is very important. And to your question, you've got Roman soldiers who had a job to do. But by the way, just not long after that, remember Jesus leaves the earth after 40 days appearing to disciples. The only place that's mentioned is Acts chapter 1. Well, just about a dozen chapters later, Peter is in prison, and an angel lets him out. And he goes back to the disciples, and the little girl, who Rhoda, I think is her name, she sees him, and she leaves him at the front door, where she goes tell everybody, you know, and they can't quite believe Peter's really there. Well, my point is, when Herod finds out that these Roman soldiers, they wake up in the morning and they go, hey, where's this guy? I don't know, but the jail cell was still locked, and we're standing in front, and nobody came in, and nobody came out, and we're still here. Well, they seem to have done their job, and Herod had them all killed. You just have to read a few chapters further, and you see it. But so you've got the Roman soldiers with a real motivation to make sure. Secondly, I think just as powerful, maybe more powerful, is that you have the Jewish leaders, and they're there, and they want to make sure that he doesn't, you know, get off the cross or out of the tomb alive, and that's important. We got this idea that all of his followers were believers, but we find out later that a couple of them could ask pretty good questions. They were skeptical enough to, that all the five major theories that are aimed at the resurrection of Jesus, the famous ones that you handle in apologetics, all five of them, you can find them in the Gospels. They're all there, and three of the five are thought up by Christians.
My favorite theory, I don't know if this fits into the five, is that he really did not completely die on the cross.
Theory. Yeah.
Somehow he recovered from this, from the crucifixion, and escaped.
Yeah.
He was able to be revived and nursed back to health, and that's
right.
That explained how he was able to reappear to people.
Right. Yeah, now that's the only one out of the five. I said that five of them are in the Gospels. That's there, but it's the only one that's not really supposed. It's just hinted at. And the person who hints at it, of the five major theories, three of them are thought up by believers and two of them by unbelievers. This is one of the unbeliever ones, and it's not supposed, as I said. It's just, you know, let's just make sure kind of a thing. It's Pilate, and when Pilate finds out in the book of Mark that he had died so quickly. I like the King James rendering here. I don't usually use the King James, but the word in here is pretty cool. It says, when Pilate marveled that he was so soon dead. We don't talk like that so much today, but that's pretty cool. He marveled that he was so soon dead, and he said, hey, we don't want this guy to get through our fingers. Are you sure? So they went out to the crucifixion site, brought the centurion in. That's pretty serious business if you're the centurion, and we go around killing people who aren't doing their job. Is this guy dead? Yep, he is. All
yeah,
right,
because well. Who knows it? Yeah, and a centurion, you know, be sort of like a high-ranking official at the time within the military. Important stuff. All right, when we come back, did Jesus really say he was going to come back from the dead? What was it he really said? And we're going to take this story further and look at some of the historical evidence of his resurrection. Stay tuned.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com.
It's very easy to be a criminal. All you need to burglarize a home is one simple household tool, a pair of scissors. If your home security system can be compromised by a criminal using scissors, then you're making it easy for them. Almost every home security system, even those sold by big name companies, has a weakness: the phone line. You shell out $1,500, get locked into a long-term contract, and think you're safe. But a burglar can destroy your alarm in seconds with one snip. And when a burglar cuts your phone line, you're defenseless. Simply Safe Home Security is the smarter choice. Built by Harvard engineers, Simply Safe uses a wireless connection to call the cops. Scissors can't cut it, and that means your home stays safe. 24/7 professional monitoring is under $15 a month with no contract. Simply Safe Home Security keeps you safer than the other guys for half the cost. Protect your home with the alarm you can trust. Simply Safe. Go to simplysafedefense.com now for an exclusive 10% offer. That's simplysafedefense.com.
Usually, the older one gets, the less you are able to absorb amino acids and the less you are able to repair the 100 trillion cells of your body. As a result, you'll have less energy, your tissues will shrink, and you'll become wrinkled. An older person will typically injure more easily and heal more slowly. Not fun. However, if you could consume a protein powder that is easier to absorb, then you may be able to gain back some strength, muscle, and speed of recovery. One World Whey is a highly digestible whey protein powder that may be the perfect answer for you.
My name is Errol. I'm 74 years old. You know, the taste of One World Whey is amazing. I play pickleball, and since taking One World Whey and your trace mineral supplement, I have more energy and recover faster from my working out. I used to take another grass-fed whey protein powder, but now I'm getting much better results using One World Whey.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325, or visit oneworldway.com.
Hi, this is Steve Sanchez, and based on a recent study, it was found that 57 million Americans had legal issues over the last 12 months, but only 60% of those studied sought out the services of a lawyer. Why? In a nutshell, affordability. Well, my friends at Legal Shield have created a solution that can help you not if, but when you need an attorney. For as little as $17 per month, Legal Shield will provide you unlimited access to qualified attorneys at an accomplished law firm for advice and counsel on legal issues, no matter how serious or trivial. For over 40 years and with 1.4 million families across North America, Legal Shield can help you, the loyal GCN listener. Representatives are standing by now to answer your questions, so call them now at 1-855-340-SAVE. That's 1-855-340-7283, or visit them at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com.
Results will vary from case to case.
You're listening to Jim Paris Live.
All right, we are back. The website is christianmoney.com. The blog is blog.christianmoney.com. Interesting note, I wrote an article about Michael Savage's new book, and Savage saw the article, put it up on his website. We've been slammed this week with traffic, thanks to Michael Savage, so we appreciate that greatly. All right, in this hour, my guest is Dr. Gary Habermas. The book is The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus. Let's go ahead and do this. Let's open up the phone lines. We'll take some of your questions on this. We'll also take questions by email, and then I've got my own questions. So we'll have some fun here, our last two segments. The toll-free number, if you're listening live on a Sunday night, 877-317-6432, 877-317-6432. And the email is jim@christianmoney.com. Of course, always include your city when emailing a question in. jim@christianmoney.com or toll free 877-317-6432. Dr. Habermas, talking here about the resurrection of Jesus, did Jesus really make it clear that he was going to resurrect from the dead? Or was it kind of in code? If this temple is, this temple will be destroyed, I'll rebuild it in 3 days. Did he ever come out and make it clear that this is what's going to happen? I'm going to die, and then I'm going to come back from the dead.
Right. Yeah. Now, the I always like to use sources that the critics prefer. So that I leave them with as little, let's say, wiggle room as possible. Their favorite gospel is the Gospel of Mark. It's the earliest. They think it's the best source. Okay. Mark predicts Jesus' resurrection several times. He predicts it in Mark 8, Mark 9, Mark 10, and then again in Mark 14. And in Mark 14, verse 28, he says, I'll die, I'll be killed, and I'll go before you into Galilee, and there you will see me. So he predicts an appearance to them in Galilee. I think the biggest oddity about this is the disciples just, you know, kind of don't get the idea. Peter shows up with the sword when the soldiers come to take Jesus. He says, I'll stand by you till the end, even to death. And Jesus said, you know, you'll deny me. And he says, no way, but he does. And I think it's Luke who says, Peter, when he denied him the third time, he walked out and wept bitterly that he had denied his Lord. So I think the point is that the disciples didn't get it, but that doesn't mean Jesus didn't say it. And Jesus says it very carefully. A good friend of mine, Mike Lacona, co-author on my that book right there, Mike actually did the best work of that book, so I'm glad to recommend Mike. Mike wrote an article in a peer-reviewed critical journal, non-evangelical journal, and he gave six reasons why we know that Jesus was raised from the dead. And the reasons he gave, six reasons why we know Jesus predicted that he was going to be raised from the dead. And the reasons he gave are the kind of reasons that the skeptics prefer. And one of them is that it's mentioned in several sources. You know, Luke 1:1-4 says, I've checked out many sources before I wrote this life of Jesus. And critics have a way of thinking they can trace, you know, how many different sources there are. And Jesus' predictions are what the critics call multiply attested. They have different predictions from different sources, even in a parable. So that's a different kind of teaching. You know, a parable is not the same as a lecture. And so it's clear. In fact, I think the critics are starting to see this. I'm going to guess maybe more than not think that Jesus predicted his death, or at least suspected it, and perhaps his resurrection / exaltation after death.
Now, one of the debates I saw online on YouTube, you were on some kind of a television broadcast, and it was a split screen, and there was a guy debating you, and his position was, look, this whole idea of the leader of a religion being killed and then coming back to life, this is all part of Greek mythology and, right. And sort of the legends at the time, and you really refuted that. I wanted to ask you maybe more of a larger question. How common has it been in history that a religious leader would say, all right, they're going to kill me, and then I'm coming back from the dead. In physical form, I'm coming back, you're going to see me. How often did that happen? Because that's quite a promise to make. I mean, talk about waiting for the payoff pitch. I mean, if you're going to say something like that and not deliver on it, that's the end of the game. So how many times in major religions do we see this kind of a setup for something so amazing that had to happen?
Well, that's a great question. I would say zero. And here's why I would say zero. There's an article on my website, GaryHabermas.com. People can download it. Nothing is for sale on my website, so hopefully people can use it. But I think it may be the lead article under the left-hand side tab, articles, journal articles. The lead article is an argument called Resurrection Claims in Non-Christian Religions. Resurrection Claims in Non-Christian Religions. And what the guy, what I'm arguing there is that a lot of the guys who do this kind of thing, we're talking about major founders of major world religions. If you're going to compare to some like person, let's compare Jesus to, you know, take your choice, Buddha, Confucius, Zoroaster,
Muhammad would be in there, right?
Muhammad, Krishna for the Hindus. You know, pick whomever you want. If you want to take Old Testament figures, take Elijah, Daniel, Abraham. Take a choice. And what I argue in that article is, and give a lot of detail for this, is that no founder of a major world religion is believed by his own followers to be raised from the dead. Now, if no major founder, whether Buddha or Moses, or if none of the founders of these major religions are believed to have been raised from the dead, if you follow me here, it would be worse for them if their leader predicted it ahead of time than if he didn't. Because then
right, so then it kind of sets up the $64,000 question, which is that if Jesus is saying, I'm going to die, I'm going to be killed, and I'm going to come back from the dead, and you're going to see me. Now, if you set the table that way, and you don't make that reappearance,
right.
It's over. I mean, all of these people, they're waiting breathlessly to see what's going to happen. And there were doubters. Thomas, for example, was a doubter. Many of them were doubters. But something happened, and it had to be something so amazing and so convincing that these people, many of them, went on to be martyrs. They went from coward to martyr, that they were so unwilling to deny their faith that they actually went to their deaths, brutal deaths, because of what they believed happened. And we'll let you take it there. I know we've only got a few seconds here, but let's do this. Let's set it up. When we come back from the break, we've got a few questions that have come in. After the break, we're going to come back and we're going to get into the issue of what could have happened that caused these people, the Apostle Paul, the disciples, the followers of Jesus, the people who were living at the time, what could have kept Christianity going if, in fact, Jesus said, I'm the Son of God, I'm going to be killed, and I'm going to come back to life, and you're going to see me. So he sets himself up in the most unbelievable scenario. And this is it. I mean, either he's going to come back and follow through on what he promised, or he's not.
Exactly.
Very interesting. We're going to get the answers to all of that and the historical backup right after this. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Jim Paris, radio talk show host and editor of the website ChristianMoney.com. You may know me from my numerous appearances on the 700 Club. I was a multimillionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy by the age of 40. What I learned during my financial collapse was a revolutionary new way of praying for my finances, and it's revealed in my brand new book, How to Pray for a Financial Miracle. Now, the book has been endorsed by Dave Ramsey, former vice presidential candidate Wayne Allen Root, TV radio talk show host George Nori, and countless others. I want to send you a free 48-minute audio overview of the book. All I need you to do is call my office and leave your email address on my voicemail. The number to dial, 888-427-8755. 888-427-8755. Again, 888-427-8755.
Yuvia needed financing to grow her restaurant business, but her bank simply didn't understand.
I was frustrated.
Yuvia found On Deck Business Loans.
On Deck did it for me. I called on Saturday, and I had $50,000 in my account on Monday morning.
How about the terms?
Incredibly easy. It doesn't mess with your cash flow.
On Deck changed everything.
This company, On Deck, is going to be there for me.
Was it a good move?
I'm looking to increase sales probably 30%.
Been in business for at least a year with $100,000 plus in revenue, On Deck can get you $5,000 to $250,000 in as little as one business day. And they're A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau.
On Deck has opened up so many doors for me now. Truly, truly, the sky is the limit. I'm excited.
Apply now at OnDeckLending.com or call 800-326-5430. 800-326-5430. 800-326-5430.
Loan subject to lender approval.
It's very easy to be a criminal. All you need to burglarize a home is one simple household tool, a pair of scissors. If your home security system can be compromised by a criminal using scissors, then you're making it easy for them. Almost every home security system, even those sold by big name companies, has a weakness: the phone line. You shell out $1,500, get locked into a long-term contract, and think you're safe. But a burglar can destroy your alarm in seconds with one snip. And when a burglar cuts your phone line, you're defenseless. SimpliSafe Home Security is the smarter choice. Built by Harvard engineers, SimpliSafe uses a wireless connection to call the cops. Scissors can't cut it, and that means your home stays safe. 24/7 professional monitoring is under $15 a month with no contract. SimpliSafe Home Security keeps you safer than the other guys for half the cost. Protect your home with the alarm you can trust. SimpliSafe. Go to SimpliSafeDefense.com now for an exclusive 10% offer. That's SimpliSafeDefense.com.
The Genesis Communications Network is one of America's premier broadcasters of captivating talk radio. We thank you for listening. Now, just imagine, there are thousands of people who are just as passionate about radio as you are. But what you may not realize is how easy and affordable it is to advertise with us. Radio commercials for your business could be heard on hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. every day. We can help you by creating an effective radio advertising campaign for your company. From script writing to producing your commercial, just like the one you're listening to right now, no other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com, and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
You are listening to Jim Paris Live.
All right, we are back. This is our final segment with Dr. Gary Habermas of Liberty University. In my view, the world's foremost authority on the case for the resurrection of Jesus and the historicity of Jesus, and his books, you can get them at Amazon. And as he mentioned, he's got a great website, GaryHabermas.com, and that's with an M. So it's H-A-B like in boy, E-R-M like in Michael, A-S, GaryHabermas.com. And by the way, folks, this program will be available on replay, as all of our archives of the show are free. And that's been the case from day one. So you can go to iTunes, you can go to YouTube, you can go to Stitcher. Where else are we? We're on SoundCloud. This would be a great program if you want to grab it and share it with a friend. I know this one's going to be huge in the downloads this week. All right, so we're now up to the point of the resurrection of Jesus and the historical proof of that. We've got a question coming in from an emailer from Chicago. And Dr. Habermas, I want you to kind of work this into your answer, because this is a great question. So where we end up with Lee Strobel's book, your argument, many of the arguments are, look, if he didn't really rise from the dead, how do we explain how people reacted after the fact? How do you explain what the disciples do in terms of going on, many of them to be martyred? How do you explain the Apostle Paul, a persecutor, a murderer of Christians, to have a changed life? How do we explain all this if not for the resurrection? So here's a question from Chicago. They say that they've been seeing a lot of things here on the internet denying that there's evidence of even the existence of the Apostle Paul and even the disciples. And so how do you make the argument, Gary, that we have evidence of the resurrection by way of these changed lives, if now the skeptics are saying, hey, Paul and the disciples never really existed, we have no proof of that?
Well, okay. First of all, let's go back to a little part of the discussion we had earlier. Who says this sort of thing? I know one scholar who says that Paul may not have existed. As far as I know, of the scholars, there's one. Now, he could be right. A person who's not a scholar could be right. Anybody can say anything and be right. But usually when we want to, check something out, when my tooth is hurting, I don't ask my paper boy. When I want my lawn mowed, I don't go to my family doctor. I go to people who do these things and who know, you know, why is this there and what's this and let's solve your problem. Okay. Even the biggest name skeptics will tell you that this is not a good argument. Now, let me just use an example. The best-known skeptic in America is named Bart Ehrman. He's a former evangelical, and he calls himself, he says, I'm not a believer, I'm not a Christian, I'm an agnostic leaning toward atheism, and he publishes most of his books with either Oxford University Press or Harper. He's a university professor at a major university, North Carolina, and he says that one of the major arguments for Jesus, he's got a whole chapter on two things, and one of them is Galatians chapter 1, and we can add Galatians chapter 2, because skeptics accept about seven of Paul's books, and Galatians is one of the books they'll grant. Anyway, Paul goes up to Jerusalem to see the apostles. At as nearly as we can tell, Paul does the math for us, 35 A.D. He's there at 35. So let's say we put the cross at 30 A.D., and Paul's trip to Jerusalem is 35. He spends 2 weeks, 15 days, with Peter and James, the brother of Jesus. Now, the big three here, Peter, Paul, James, the brother of Jesus, are about as big as you're going to get in the early church in terms of influence. They're all there. And Bart Ehrman says, now look, we've got an early source that Paul received this just 5 years after the cross. Forget that Mark is written in 40 years later. We've got this report from just 5 years later, and they're talking about the nature of the gospel. Well, of course, the resurrection is part of the gospel. The gospel, when it's defined in the New Testament, by the way, the factual side is always the deity, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And so you've got Peter, James, and Paul. Okay, the next chapter, he goes back to Jerusalem a few years later, and John is there. Now, this is key, because there's nobody in the early church who's more influential. Name one. Name one person. I'm not talking about Jesus, but name one person in the early church after Jesus is gone who's more influential than Peter, Paul, John, and James, the brother of Jesus. They're by far the most influential. They agree with Paul that the gospel he's preaching is the right one. In Paul's words, they added nothing to me. They added nothing to me. And in 1 Corinthians 15:11, by the way, which is another book accepted by the critics, Paul says, whether you get this from these guys or whether you get it from me, you're going to get the exact same answer on the resurrection. We all are witnesses. All right, so you got the big four. Now, what about them being martyrs? Someone just wrote to me the other day and said, we don't have anything on the martyrs for hundreds of years, right? Wrong. Now, I wouldn't go around and say what Christians say frequently, we can prove that all 12 were martyred or 11 of the 12 were martyred. I wouldn't say that. I think all 12 of them were willing to be martyrs. But how many do we know were martyred? We have the martyrdom, we have the reports of three of the big four, Peter, Paul, and James, from the first century source. And one of them's not even Christian, Josephus. And the last remaining guy there is John. We have him. A lot of Christians think he wasn't martyred. We have a second century source, which is still very early, a second century source for John's martyrdom. So here's Bart Ehrman, the best-known skeptic in the country, saying, he says, this is as close as we get to the eyewitnesses. This is a strong argument for the historicity of Jesus. That's Bart Ehrman saying that, who's an unbeliever, an agnostic, leaning toward atheism, the most influential critic today.
All right, now this is another great question coming in from Florida. They say, well, how do you respond to the idea that, look, Muslims will die for their faith? They'll strap a bomb to themselves and die. The fact that these people, the disciples, the Apostle Paul, many of the believers in the early church, okay, so they would give their lives for their faith. Well, Muslims today, they'll give their lives for their faith. So how does that prove anything?
All right. First of all, it's a great question, and it's true. I have nothing to say about the facts of that question. There are many people and many religions, and I don't think we'd have to look very far, frankly, to find an atheist, say, Marxist, who, you know, from 1960 to date, would have died for Marxism. I think about the Buddhist priests who set themselves on fire during Vietnam to protest the war. So, yes, we can find this in every religion. Okay, now what's the difference? All right, let's compare a Christian missionary today with any other person in any other religion or philosophy or political view which give their life for something. Here's what we can agree on. They both died. Here's what else we can agree on. They were both willing to die. Here's something else we can agree on. They wouldn't have done it if they didn't believe it. Now, at that point, the person says, well, see, what's the difference? Okay, here's the difference. Anybody today who dies doesn't know firsthand what the facts were 2,000 years ago, right? Nobody was alive 2,000 years ago. So if a Christian dies for their faith, they're believing, say, Paul, or they're believing Peter, or they're believing James. And a Muslim may be believing Muhammad, and a Jewish person might be believing Moses. But people today are dying for what they believe somebody else knows to be true many, many years ago. Okay, here's the difference. We have testimony of these same four men, Peter, James, John, Paul. We have testimony from the big four, and we don't know if they saw the risen Jesus. We have them saying, I did. But they know whether they saw Jesus or not. We don't. I mean, we can report it by faith. But, you know, we can listen to their testimony. And they say, I've seen the risen Jesus. Okay. Now, when they die for their faith, that's a world of difference. When those four guys died for their faith, what does dying for your faith mean? Everybody agrees. You die for your faith willingly, or even if you're just willing to die for your faith, it proves that you believe the message.
Yeah, these were the inside guys. So, you know, the analogy I make is, look, if you were an assistant in a magic show and you knew that it was all fake, you wouldn't ask the magician to make you really levitate while you were out to dinner with him. You would know it's a trick. But these were all the inside people that were right there, and they believed that it was real, and they were willing to give their lives. Gary Habermas, great interview. We'll have you back, sir. God bless. We'll talk to you next week, folks. Bye-bye.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX, or my website, danpilla.com.
There are hundreds of silver products on the market today, but there's nothing like the astonishing health benefits of the multi-patented One Silver Solution. Boost your immune system at a great price with our Silver Solution Liquid, starting at $12.95 a bottle, now available in regular and extra strength. That's half the price of the leading competitors. Call 844-USE-SILVER for your free catalog, or go to onesilversolution.com, onesilversolution.com. There is only one Silver Solution.
Are you suffering from EP? The symptoms include fraudulent charges to your credit card. Your subway card says it's empty, but you bought it yesterday. Someone's been in your hotel room, but the desk clerk says they only show you entering the room. These are signs of EP, electronic pickpocketing. Payment cards, transit cards, even hotel room keys use a radio chip so you can just wave your card at the register, the turnstile, or your hotel room door. But what's convenient for you is also convenient for thieves, waving scanners to electronically pickpocket you without even touching you. The good news is there's a cure. ID Stronghold has created leather wallets and clutches that have built-in EP protection. Layers of shielding material cleverly concealed in a beautiful leather wallet that stops the symptoms of EP. Go to IDStronghold.com now and get the cure. IDStronghold.com. Warning, ID Stronghold wallets could lead to feelings of safety and security, comfort in crowds, and euphoria. If you experience these emotions, immediately inform your friends and family about IDStronghold.com so they can feel better too.